All right, this is Steeler Country. I am your host, Tony, alongside my two co-hosts, Mike and Joe. Guys, I am so excited that we are doing the podcast tonight. We usually record the podcast Tuesday nights, but since the Steelers played on a Thursday, we decided to record it early. But not only that, we decided to record it early because that was, to me, an awe-inspiring performance. I have so much to say tonight, but I'm going to go to you first, Joe, because you are the one that requested this podcast. So I'll let you take the floor and describe what I think was one of the great Steeler performances of all time.
Well, thank you, Tony. Hi, Mike. Hello, Steeler Nation. It's a good day. It's a good day for Steeler Nation. Yeah, you know, Tony, I'm glad you brought that up because I did request that we do the podcast tonight if we could get together Friday night because I was excited. That game pumped me up, man. I get up at 5 in the morning to go to work, and at midnight last night I couldn't fall asleep. I had the NFL Network on. I'm watching Antonio Brown talk to the guys. I never do that, you know. But that I was inspired by the team and that effort. And so this morning I said, okay, well, I want to listen to some sports radio and pick up some stuff. I listen to basketball crap all day long. All I could get is basketball. All I could get is, I won't even get into it now because it'll
baseball trades too.
Baseball, who's making money in baseball or whatever. I didn't hear too much baseball. I heard a lot of way too much basketball. And then, you know, I'm wanting to hear about my quarterback, and one of the gutsiest performances of all time. You know, I got to watch freaking Kellen Winslow for the last 30 years getting helped off the field because he tried so hard. Okay. And I can't get a little bit of accolades for my Ben. Okay. Playing on another block foot. So I wanted to hear about the Steelers, and I couldn't hear about the Steelers. And what I did hear about the Steelers, the majority of it was negative, and we'll get into that later. But so I text Tony. I said, hey, man, let's do a podcast because I can't be the only guy in Steeler Nation wanting to talk about this. So let's talk about it, man. Holy crap. Holy crap. I have to tell you, I sat there, guys, watching this game open up. And it started out with the Browns driving all the way down the field. I'm like, okay, are we gonna play any defense tonight? And finally we did, and held them to a field goal. And so the Browns had a 3-0 lead, and that was the end of that.
Right.
Then the Steelers came down, scored a quick 7.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing started to unravel, starting with Hines Ward. Okay. He breaks the Steelers reception record, right? And he's about to make 10,000 catches or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he fumbles. It's unbelievable. Their very next offensive play, Heath Miller fumbles. And then injuries to Ziggy Hood,
Pouncey
and Ben all in the second quarter, right?
Right.
So now I'm looking, I'm going home. Tony and I, we're looking at each other. Brian, and we're going, you know, I'm getting texts from my Steeler friends and stuff, and they're going, what's happening to our team? Why is our team falling apart? And I'm just going, you know, that's it. This season's done, man. We're not, you know,
yeah.
Playoffs, we're going to get into playoffs. I'm not saying we're not going to get into playoffs, but we're not, you know, forget it. And then Ben came out in the second half, and you had to think, and I'm sorry I'm going long, but I want us all to go long on this and just tell, cause it's fun to relive this stuff. Ben comes out and I'm thinking, what the hell's this guy doing? Oh my God, he's going to throw interceptions. And I wasn't expecting big things. And I have to tell you, we ran the ball and Mendenhall and Redmond. I don't think I've ever seen those guys run so hard. It's going to be hard to praise the line for blocking, run blocking, but pass protection, we'll get into that in a second. Pass protection in the second half of the game. They were protecting the Virgin Mary or something, all right? But Mendenhall with his cutbacks, with his vision, with his just punishing running. And I kept saying, how many times did I say it, Tony? I love this kind of football.
Mm-hmm.
Jamming it down their throats. We get the ball down to the 1-yard line, can't get it in the end zone, 4 tries. And I wasn't even pissed. I was happy Tomlin went for it because you're going to leave the Browns on a 1-yard line. It's exactly what happened. We get the ball back on a 36. I don't even remember how we didn't score. Okay. Antonio Brown, big time. So many big time. William Gay with that key interception in the end zone. Come on. Tony called it awe-inspiring. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. The team was like on a mission in the second half. And if they can carry that like they did in 2005, they can carry that. Well, I'll tell you what, man, that this team's going to breeze through, but it doesn't matter who they run into. They're going to run through them like a buzzsaw. So really an exciting game. Could not wait to talk to you guys about it. Everybody, not just you and Mike and Tony, but everybody in Steeler Nation, man. What a great day. One of the best days to be a Steeler fan, because you couldn't be prouder of the effort the guys put out yesterday.
Mike, take me through your thoughts from the first half of this game when it seemed like, you know, things are unraveling. Ben's hurt, potentially season over here to, you know, the end of this game with a huge Steeler win.
Okay, I will. And actually, before the game, my thoughts were, this is one of those games where the Steelers should blow them out. And if they do blow them out, everyone's going to say, big deal, you blew out a bad team, the Browns. Do it all the time. Or the Steelers are going to play bad or lose. And so there's really nothing to gain from this game. There wasn't really – I mean, other than just watching your team play because it's fun to watch them, you weren't going to get anything out of this game. There wasn't going to be that, you know, playing against the Patriots or some great team and beating them and really feeling good about it. But – the outcome, the way it unfolded, I mean, just like Joe said, and you too, Tony, I mean, this is something to be excited about. It's kind of a weird thing that they beat the Browns, which they are a bad team, but just the way it all unfolded, I mean, it is something to be excited about. I think that this team, we've talked about it all season, and Tomlin talks about it too. I mean, they find ways to win. I mean, they play ugly games, but they find ways to win. And I think that's becoming to be a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful style. I mean, you know, throw style points out the window, but you know what? I think this is their style. And so, okay, so taking you through, giving up the first drive, that's not a big deal. Even if it was seven, it was like a big deal. You know, LeBeau's going to get the defense in order and we're going to score five touchdowns anyway, so no big deal. And then sure enough, Ben gets the ball back. First, they hold him to a field goal, which was good. That third and really short when they had the ball at like the 1-inch line and Harrison and the whole defense blew up Peyton Hillis on that play. That was a great defensive play. But anyway, so we'd get the ball and drive right down the field, and then we get the ball again and we're gonna do it again. And it seems like, you know what, this offense is really starting to click. I mean, it's really coming into its own at the right time of the season is what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking we are on our way to 35, 42 points. And then Hines fumbles. And what I said at that time was, you know what, Hines gets limited chances now. He doesn't get as many touches as he used to get. And so he's trying to really make something happen. And if you watch him running with the football, it's almost like, I mean, he got his 5 or 6 yards. That was enough on that play. That was good enough. But he wanted more. He wanted to try to get to the end zone, and he's really going, like, you know, head on head with the guy and not protecting the football. And that's, you know, absolutely what happened there. Mm-hmm. And then we get the ball again, you know, after Paul Maul's interception. And like Joe said, it was one or two plays later, Heath Miller fumbles, and that was just kind of a fluke play. And then you started thinking, you know what, this game's just not going the way it's supposed to go. I mean, it's just, we're just making it harder on ourselves. But you know that all we need is one more touchdown and it's over, because the Browns aren't going to do anything. But then Ben gets hurt, and when he limps off the field like that, yeah, you're thinking, okay, season over. If he doesn't come back, there's just no way we're going to get through the playoffs. And then so Bash comes on the field, and you're thinking, like, well, at least let's just get through this game and see how Ben's doing. And I'll tell you what, after Charlie Batch's second pass, I was on the phone calling Brett Favre's agent. Okay, I was thinking, and you know what? And just about a week ago, I was thinking, you know, who's going to sign? No one's signed Favre. I know people are talking about him. Favre says he's retired, but who would actually bring in Favre and think he can learn an offense and be better than their backup quarterback? I mean, no team would do that at this point in the season. But when Ben went down and Charlie looked not so good, I was thinking, you know what? Just get the gunslinger out there, man. Bruce Arians would love to just fling the ball around. We'll see what happens. I mean, throw it against the wall. If it sticks, it sticks. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's better than nothing. So I was really thinking about it's time to get Favre. But and Tony, I can't wait to hear your comments about Ben, being that you think he's kind of a drama queen. But the guy, if he's playing that, man, he played it to a T, because he really limped off and he came back on the field, was limping. He couldn't step into his throws. And
he couldn't step into the handoffs.
Yeah, that's right. He almost couldn't make some of the handoffs. It was unbelievable. So those are my thoughts, at least up until that point in the game. And I'll turn it over to you at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm glad we're doing the podcast today, because, you know, last night after the game, I was, you know, very excited to see the win, you know, a tremendous performance. You know, the team showed a lot of heart. Went to bed thinking, wow, you know, the Steelers really, really got through this one well and set themselves up well for a playoff run now. But man, I woke up this morning just thinking about, just, you know, reflecting on this game, and just, it's awe-inspiring, this game. I'm so excited about this team right now and the possibilities, because when you think about all of the, Ben Roethlisberger's injury is one thing that happened last night, and that was the biggest thing that happened last night, was Ben got injured, but, that's not the only thing. I mean, you know, let's not forget Emmanuel Sanders was hurt. Lamar Woodley was hurt. You know, then Pouncey goes down. Then Ziggy Hood goes down. James Ferrier has to be rotated out of the game just because, you know, he's old and tired at this point in the season. You know, my Twitter's blowing up with sports writers from Pittsburgh going, you know, Ferrier just can't play a full game anymore. You know, he's got to get rotated. And I'm thinking, geez, you know, what is going on with this team right now, you know? And, you know, it all culminates in Ben going down, and I'm sitting there at halftime, and I gotta be honest, Mike, I didn't think about Favre. I just kind of sat there thinking, you know, this team was so ready to make a run, and it's all gonna end because Ben's hurt. And I just it was just so disappointing to watch a season that had so much potential crash and burn on a Thursday night game against Cleveland, which we all said was like, this is the dangerous, stupid game that the Steelers have to play. And here we are. And then the other thing that you don't think about is the penalties in this game. The Steelers were called for so many penalties. There were two calls overturned by Ed Hockley, both of which are probably wrongly overturned. And at the very least, you know, there's not enough evidence there to overturn a call. So, you know, everything seemed to be going against them. The ball's bouncing. Guys who don't fumble. Hines Ward fumbles. Hines Ward never fumbles. Heath Miller fumbles. Heath Miller never fumbles. I was just – during halftime, I was – that was my low point of the season, where you guys might have had your low point, you know, against Houston when they lost to Houston. Right. You know, I tried to take some positives out of that. Going into halftime, there was no positives. Like you said, Mike, when you watch Charlie Batch try to throw that out route, it was – I mean, I don't want to bash on Charlie Batch right here, but that was not NFL quality. That was barely college.
I'll tell you something. Terrell Suggs' grandmother, okay, she could have taken that to the house.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I mean, we were in deep trouble, and we're all thinking, well, what about Dennis Dixon? You know, can we get Dennis Dixon in there? And no, we can't, because Dennis Dixon is inactive for this game, because we don't even dress three quarterbacks.
So Hines was the next quarterback.
So Hines is the next quarterback. And, you know, obviously, I didn't even care. The thought didn't even matter whether or not we could beat the Browns. It's okay, well, now we're going to be the 5 seed. So can we go on the road and beat, you know, can we even beat Tebow in the playoffs without Ben? How long is Ben going to be out? A high ankle sprain, that could be a month, you know?
I don't think we could beat anybody.
I don't, yeah. It's
unless we signed a quarterback.
Wait, now you guys underestimate. Wait, it was only last season when we had the 4-game suspension of Ben.
Right.
And the team, the defense played better defense than I think I've seen Steelers maybe since, who knows, decades worth of defense, those 4 games. There was unbelievable defense. And we got some offensive production out of Charlie Batch. Charlie, listen, the out route was a frightening thing. it really was. I mean, in a 7-3 game, that thing could have easily been a 10-7 10-7 turnaround in no time. So we got away with one there. But coming off the bench like that, who knows how many snaps Charlie's really taken all week, all season. So give him a week to get into it, and I think Charlie comes out and does an okay job, and we've got a game plan to match.
I think that's
I don't think you're going to lose every game.
I agree. I'm going to change my tune on that too.
You know.
Yeah. So the
that must have been tough coming in cold like that, and then being at your 5-yard line and having to throw two passes.
Yeah. And he can't even get snaps from Pouncey. He's got to get them
right from Legurski. And then Kimoyatu was hurt at one point, although I don't know if that was such a bad thing because Kimoyatu had maybe his worst game of the season. But, this second half performance by the Steelers, this is the Steelers in, the entire Steeler mentality, is that second half. The never say die, do whatever it takes to win. This offensive line, say what you will about their performance on the goal line, and I'm sick and tired of hearing all the negativity coming out of this game about, I know the Steelers won, but they couldn't, what's a Steeler team that can't convert from, first and goal from the one? That stuff is going to happen. The point is they won this game even with all of the negative things that happened to them.
Hey, I take out of that four try is Mike Tomlin, okay, in a 7-3 game, all right, he knows we're on the freaking 1-yard line. We need 7 more than we need 3. We don't want to go to overtime. We're not playing for a tie. We're playing to win the damn game. Put the ball in the end zone. Go for it on 4th-and-1. Now,
So that's
a positive out of the game is Tomlin's guts to call it. I did not agree with running into the line for the 4th time. We couldn't send. I agree. Maybe don't throw it in, but send Mendenhall around the end at least. At least he's not running into 5 guys. Maybe he'll have to. Maybe he's got to juke 2 guys instead.
I think Tomlin was just stubborn. I think that he said it after the game. He said, if you can't score from the 1-yard line, you don't deserve to win the game.
Yeah, I know.
He said that's why he did that.
Yeah. And I say he's wrong. Come on. Okay, you're running into the line. You don't have an offensive line, Mike Tomlin, and you know it as well as everybody else. You don't have an offensive line that gets a push on an obvious running down. You don't.
Well, it was obvious that they were going to – it was obvious Ben wasn't going to roll out or anything, right?
Right.
Well, we're not going to do a quarterback sneak.
They were all packed in there. I really think – as soon as it came up, I said kick the field goal. I was trying to text you guys, but I couldn't do it quick enough because I really think they should have kicked the field goal, and this is my thinking on that. You go up 10-3. Then they have to score a touchdown just to tie. That means, for them to score a touchdown, they would have to get a lucky play, basically. And that's fine, but they're not going to win it in overtime also. And then we have a chance to get another score anyway. But and I understand giving them the ball at the 1 if you don't make it, because then you get good field position, and we did. And really, this is what happened after that. We got into a 3rd-and-1. And we got the first down on the 3rd-and-1, and we had the ball like inside the 25 at that point. But on 3rd-and-1, there was a holding penalty by Kimoyatu. I don't know how you hold the face.
Was that the cheap ass hands to the face?
No, it wasn't. He kind of pulled the guy's shirt as he was, I guess it was Mendenhall going in the hole. But I don't know how you hold. That play was like a 1-second play.
It was a bang play.
Yeah, so anyway, that pushes him back 10 yards, and then on the next play, Ben throws an interception. So really, if that interception was taken all the way back, we could have lost the game there. And then at the end, it's 7-3 thrown into the end zone. Any ticky-tack pass interference would screw us. So I think kicking the field goal, going 10-3, and then, and forcing them to earn a touchdown. But it made it exciting, that's for sure. That was an exciting game.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man, the young guys on this team who have stepped up are making such an enormous impact. And I'm looking at 2 guys, and also thinking to, I know we're not doing this now, but, we're going to eventually talk about who the team MVP is, the offensive player of the year, the defensive player of the year.
Well, the year ain't over.
I think right now you can make a very, very strong case that William Gay is at least defensive player of the year. Over Lamar Woodley because he's been healthy the entire year and he could be MVP.
Well, let's see the rest of the season.
Well, he might get one of those, I don't know what you call them, the Sissy Award of Most Improved or something like that.
Yeah, Most Improved. Yeah, no, I think he has made as big an impact on this team as anyone. He has changed the style, the mentality of the defense. And on a night when the pass rush was not getting there, with Ziggy out of the game, it was very hard for the Steelers to get pass rush outside of Jason World. They were double teaming Harrison all night. Kiesel was doing everything he could. Cam Hayward on the other side, struggled a little bit. And it was only Jason World who was able to get in there. And Colt McCoy did a damn good job of stepping up in the pocket and avoiding the rush most of the time. So it came down to, guys getting open in coverage, which didn't happen too often. And especially as the field got tighter and tighter, the defense came up, really huge. And it goes right back to that first drive. I mean, I know we want to criticize the defense for that first drive, but, there was first and goal on the one. And they stopped them for a field goal. I know there's a holding in there, but, still, that was a great series as well. So, I think William Gay last night, that interception, first of all, not only the interception, but he made another great play. He made another great play in the end zone, blocking a pass away. He had a great night. And then the other young guy that's really made an impact this year, and I think he has now supplanted Mike Wallace as the best wide receiver on the team. Antonio Brown is a playmaker. He is every bit as good as Mike Wallace. He's every bit as good as I think any wide receiver in this league. He only needs more chances to shine now. He can catch every throw. He's a deep threat. He's a threat over the middle. He's great at eluding defenders. He's great with yards after the catch. Sky is the limit for that guy. He's only in his second year. Guys have sophomore slumps. This guy is having a sophomore,
And Wallace is only in his third
season. Wallace is only in his third season. These two guys hopefully will be Steelers for years to come.
Yeah, Antonio Brown, it's amazing how he just catches the ball. He's a small guy. It doesn't seem like it just doesn't seem like that he would be able to, stretch and just hang on to a lot of those passes. I agree. He's doing a great job. And I think that Mike Wallace just needs more touches. They need to get him, find ways to get him the ball more.
Well, I guess he's getting double covered. They're so scared of letting Mike Wallace open. They don't let him open. That's why I'm not going to sit here and say Antonio.
Like the crossing route over the middle.
More valuable than Wallace.
Right.
Because without Wallace, they're going to beat the hell out of Antonio.
Well, one makes the other work. I agree with you there.
So, look, Wallace was just as deadly when they got him the ball. I got news for you, Ed Hockley, and whatever other blind asswipe was looking at that replay. You can't show me any place where Mike Wallace's knee hits the turf. It don't happen. It's not there. Okay.
I agree with you.
I agree with you. I got HD. We played it back in slow motion.
I disagree. Okay? I thought I was fine with that.
His knee doesn't hit the ground.
I agree with you that it's hard to tell, but here's where I don't side with you. And I agree with you last night. I agreed with you last night, but in watching it again, what's pointed out on a replay that I saw is watch his knee. Before his knee bends, there's no grass on the knee. Then when it comes back up, there's grass all over the knee.
The announcers said that, so you guys must have the sound off or something.
Yeah,
I heard him say it.
Yeah, so
you just didn't believe it?
I don't know how his grass. I don't know how did it fly Drew. Up onto his knee. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the defender kicked it up.
Come on now.
It's crappy turf there.
It is crappy turf. That is true.
The turf's always.
And that up. It's funny, as I said last week, the turf never helps us out. Always our guys falling, never their guys falling. And guess who falls on the biggest play of the game? The best defensive player Cleveland has, Joe Hayden, slips and falls on the Antonio Brown 8-yarder.
Yeah.
That was nice. Now Antonio Brown's overturn, that was just crap. Early in the game where he had his hands under the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know what Hockley saw in that.
The announcers are going, what?
I can't even believe they challenged that. I'm like, what a stupid challenge that was. They just wasted a timeout. And then this guy goes and overturns it. I have no clue.
Hockley was making bad calls all night. They were holding Jason Worlds every play. Of course they're holding Harrison. They always hold Harrison. It doesn't even matter if you hold Harrison at this point. But they were holding Jason Worlds on almost every play. They were getting away with it. But if Kimoyatu even looked at his guy wrong, they're calling holding on him. And I don't want to defend Kimoyatu because he had a bad night.
He had some bad penalties.
There's an awful lot of reviews that come back that are inexplicable. And so I said to Mike a week ago, while we were watching a Steeler game. I didn't say it to everybody, but I said it to Mike. I said, you know, I think I've had enough of the instant replay. I think I just want them calling on the field, bang, bang, and keep going. Because number one, the replay, the review, whether it's right or whether they get the call right or wrong, whether the coach wins the challenge or not, it's a long stoppage of the game. It does upset the flow of the game. I don't care how you slice it. It changes momentum. It's like a super long timeout. And then to go through all of this crap and have the officials come back with some call that you look at it and you go, I don't see what they see. I can't. I got eyes. I got high definition TV. I'm looking at all these replays. I cannot see what they see. Okay. That's number one. Number two, they come back with some kind of super technical bullshit. Okay. And they come back. Oh, the ball was moving this way or that way. It was going north when on a south and it's a late game on a Sunday. So in that case, it's not a catch. Come on, man. This stuff is garbage. And I got to tell you something. I think you miss calls anyway. As long as you're going to miss calls with the replay, you might as well miss the calls without the replay. Okay. Call the damn game the way you see it and run the next play and tell your story walking. I can't stand the instant replay. From this moment on, I am officially against the instant replay. And I don't think anybody should be ashamed of it. It's terrible. They can't execute it right. They do an awful job at administering it. And then they come back with wrong calls. And if you want to, I'll give you two giant highlights besides last night. Recall in the 2005 playoff run, greatest playoff run of all time, even better than the Packers run last year. Polamalu intercepts Peyton Manning, okay? Does a rolling interception, and these jackasses come back and say no interception. I don't know why. I can't remember the retarded explanation that they gave, but it was no explanation. It was a bunch of poppycock.
Well, actually, hold on, before you ramble on. That actually has come into play many more times since then, and the league says no, that's not the wrong call because they've called it that way many times. It's the same principle as the Calvin Johnson call,
which is also horseshit.
Right, but it may be wrong in our eyes, but as far as the rule goes, that is the rule. You have to, if you're going to go to the ground, you have to maintain possession all the way through.
But here's the thing. You can't call all that crap in real time. You can only do that with replay. Another good reason to get rid of replay. And finally, the worst call of all time, the tuck was brought to you by instant replay.
Again,
okay?
Not the wrong call, a bad
garbage,
rule.
Garbage. Okay, you couldn't call that in real time. It's impossible.
I think
they
were both
wrong. Get rid of the damn replay.
Polamalu went to the ground, and he was getting up and then dropped the ball.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If you go to the ground, you have to complete it all the way.
But he did. He went to the ground, and then he started getting up.
I agree with you on that one. That's the close. I mean, you know, it's the same thing as the Calvin Johnson thing. You know, I mean, you know, anyway, look, I don't want to get an instant replay. Instant replay is, I'm sure if you ran the numbers on it, instant replay is correct 99.9% of the time.
No, it ain't even close to that.
Its main purpose is to overturn the obvious call.
Right.
That's what you don't want to get.
But now they get into technical.
I know, they get all the
ticky-tacks.
They get
into, well, can we see it? We can't see it. No, we think this was happening. They think they have to make the call.
Even on the low end, if it were only 90.
They never come back and go, there's not enough proof to do anything.
Yeah, they do. They
never
do that.
You do it. They don't do it.
Let me give you this setting. Let me give you this setting. Let's say you get an instant replay. 45 seconds, something like that, where – no, actually, this is what it is. It's one team has a lawyer, and he has 30 seconds to tell the judge what he thinks, and the other team has their lawyer, and they get 30 seconds to tell the judge what they think about the play, and then the judge makes a decision. And you get to see all this, so it's all entertaining to the fan. I've said this before.
Judge gets 30 seconds to decide.
Yeah, so it's a minute
and a half. I got 90 seconds of this crap I got to sit through.
Yeah. That's too long?
Well, it's still better. I'll give you anything's better than the crap they do.
It's entertaining, though. You get to see what your guy's saying. You know, and if your guy doesn't know the rules well enough, get him out of there. Get another lawyer in. You hire him.
See, this is exactly – you know, I'm glad you did it.
So I haven't talked about Ben Roethlisberger yet. Let's talk about
all right,
that.
We'll talk about him. But I just want – I'll leave it at this. I'll just leave it at this. Because this city brings up the lawyer thing. That's exactly what I don't want to see, a bunch of legalese, which is what we got now. Thank you to Instant Replay. Wouldn't have it without instant replay. Right. Wouldn't have all the legalese. Okay.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger.
But Vinny Testaverde scored a touchdown. Thanks for not making the playoffs, Seahawks. Look it up. So Ben Roethlisberger, I have talked so much crap about Ben Roethlisberger on this podcast when it comes to his injuries.
You are you saying you might have something to answer for today?
I am.
You know what? Before you do, Tony, this leads me to a question I wanted to ask you.
Huh?
So can I just ask this question?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I was going to tease it later, but we'll just ask it right now. So I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
What is stronger, Tim Tebow's will to win, or Ben Roethlisberger's toughness? Which is stronger?
What does that mean? I thought it was. So I'm going to ignore that question. I apologize for that. But I'm not going to answer any question that involves Tim Tebow while talking about the greatness that is Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, okay. So I guess you answered it.
Ben Roethlisberger, look, I have criticized him in the past for what I call faking injury. And I'm not going to go back and say that, you know, he didn't fake injuries, but I am going to say this. I will never again question his toughness. This is an all-time great Steeler performance. This is going to be in the pantheon of Ben Roethlisberger performances. This will be remembered up there with his comeback in the Super Bowl and the game against Indianapolis in 2005. This will sit among those games as his best. This was such a gutsy performance to go out there with an ankle that he said after the game, I thought it was broken. Now again, you know, he has a tendency to play up injury. So, you know, I don't doubt that it was an excruciating pain out there. And you could tell he was limping around. He could barely make handoffs. He couldn't step into throws. The interception happened because, you know, he was just trying to make a play. There was no one else, there's no one else to go to on that play. He tries to loft it in there. He couldn't put any muscle behind the throw. But he went out there and he gutted it out anyway, and the team gutted it out with him, and he gave the team confidence. I think if Charlie Batch came in that game, it would have been a much different game. The Steelers wouldn't have been able to open up the playbook at all. It would have been all running. I'd say that would have been a bad thing. But certainly you need to be able to open it up a little bit, you know, get Antonio Brown involved, get Mike Wallace involved. Ben was able to do that. The team rallied around him. The offensive line played spectacular in pass blocking. They did okay in run blocking, well enough to open up holes that Mendenhall could at least cut back through. Mendenhall played his best game of the season. Isaac Redmond.
Well, I think maybe the strategy was they let the entire defense into the hole that he was supposed to run through,
and then, yeah,
so that he had daylight if he just didn't go to that hole. So I think it was a little double cross going on there.
I think that Rashard Mendenhall played his best game. Isaac Redman, you know, had another spectacular performance, you know, dragging guys with him for an extra 2 yards. Even Mualdi Moore contributed in the second half. I thought that the offensive performance in the second half was as good as we could have expected. I know we only put up 7 points. We had a lot of chances to score, though. We had first and goal from the one. We had another, you know, inside the 30, and he'd throw a pick. You know, these things are going to happen when you have a quarterback who's got who's playing on basically one leg.
Importantly, they were able to put drives together in the second half to limit Cleveland's chances at trying to get some points. So, I mean, that was important, man. That was huge. You're right. The offensive performance was, well, the whole team, man, on both sides of the ball. And then how about Polamalu? I mean, did anybody see – who saw the shot of Polamalu on the sideline? You know, he goes in and he does one of his crazy freaking hits, and I can't remember the play.
Well, no, it's a great play because it's right after we miss the goal line stand that they had. It's right after that. They get the ball. First and goal from the one, they do the quarterback sneak. Then they run the ball, and it's 3rd and 5. They call timeout. They come back from the timeout. They want to run a slant play. Polamalu sniffs it out and just clobbers the running – or the wide receiver as he tries to catch the slant route. And
dislocates his shoulder.
Yeah.
So then they show.
Wait. Was it really dislocated? I heard it was a stinger, and that's how you're gonna.
Oh, I don't know what the hell
fix
it was.
Fix stingers. Go ahead.
He had Ryan Clark yanking on his
whatever,
and Clark is like, you can just see the body language. You can't hear what they're saying, But it's so simple to fill in the words because it's like, all right, buddy, you ready? And you see Polamalu's hit. Like, you could see the body language of Clark going, yeah, I'm going to do this, man. And then you see Polamalu's head. You can't see his face. You see his head nodding. Yeah, he's not looking at him. He's got his arms sticking out. And Clark has got him with two hands. And Polamalu gives the yes up and down with his head. And then he just yanks his arm. Oh, my God. These dudes are nuts, man. They're freaking.
I gotta believe that's how you typically fix a stinger. I mean, if his shoulder's dislocated, the medical staff is not gonna let Ryan Clark over there to put it back in.
It's a very technical procedure that they were doing right there.
If anybody remembers George Carlin's
Dr. Clark took care of it.
George Carlin, when he contrasts football with baseball, and he says, just to do it very quickly, baseball guy breaks a fingernail. He's going to have to be out. He's got to call in doctors. It's a big, can't play. Football guy's got a bone sticking out of his leg and they're like, come on, put it back in and tape it up. Get me back in the game. Damn it. I mean, that's what I thought of when I'm looking at this going, oh my God, look at these guys.
Yeah. Oh, a gutsy performance by everybody on the team. And this is what I want to say is that, this is the Tomlin mentality. This is what it means to throw style points out the window and just find a way to win. It doesn't matter. It's not about, whether you look good in victory. It's whether or not you get the victory.
But this was, man, come on. We haven't seen the Steelers play like this in a long time.
Why do we feel so good about it, though? Why do we feel so good because it was against the lowly Browns? Is it because we're bashed against the wall? Because you knew you had a quarterback with one leg? And you had to, overcome that? Is that what it is? I mean, I feel good.
Come on, Mike. The whole team played better. Everybody on the team raised their game.
No, but that's great. But still, I mean, and I –
because your quarterback's limping and your center's gone.
Right.
And your defensive tackle's out. And your inside linebacker's not playing.
I don't know. It's still I feel the same way you guys do. I mean, I'm excited about this. I mean, I feel good about the team moving forward. But when you – step back and think about it. I mean, they beat the lowly Browns, but the Browns were playing tough. And he was on one leg and the ball wasn't bouncing our way. And every time we got something going, it seemed like we got a penalty to we were shooting ourselves in the foot that way. So
why? Because this was an old style Steeler win.
Yeah.
This was punch them in the mouth, run it down their throat, play dominating defense in the second half, shut them out in the second half. Because that is the only way you're going to win.
Shut them out for three quarters.
Shut them out.
You know what? Would it be inaccurate for me to say that the way they played, especially defensively, the way they played, that this game could have been 28-3, 31-3?
Absolutely.
If you look at the second drive where Ward fumbles, right? That's either a 3 or a 7 from where they're at.
You can't count the Heath Miller fumble because that was directly.
No, that
accurate.
Was a result of that. No, yeah. I know that. And you can't really count the. I think you could count.
You can either count the Wallace thing or the if we could have made it from the goal
or
line.
Score from the one. Yeah,
one
of
those. Same, right. That's right. So
that's 7 points left on the field.
Well, it's either 3 or 7 again. Right. So it's either 6 or 14 now.
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess what I'm saying is it seems like they played, the way we feel, it seems like they played well enough, and even watching them, that game was a blowout. Like, you feel like, hey, we just kicked the crap out of them. It was a blowout, but it wasn't.
You know what it was, Mike? It's, you described it. You said, well, when this happened, that happened. We were all thinking the same thing, but you said it here on the podcast, that, look, this is just one of those nights where things don't go your way, and it does happen against the Browns. And it does happen on Thursday nights. I mean, one of the worst games I ever watched the Steelers play was in 2009 in Cleveland on a Thursday night. It was just nothing that happened in that game that was worth watching or remembering or talking about. And I don't remember much other than it was one of the worst games I ever watched.
You know what we should do is we should go back and listen to that podcast because we were pissed off after that night.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, that was like in the middle of the 5-game losing streak.
Yeah, or was it the start of it?
That was the end of the 5-game losing streak.
It was the end of it.
And the season was over at that point. We could no longer.
Yeah.
We wound up winning out, did we? Yeah, we went 9-7 that year, and if Baltimore had lost the last game of the season, we would have made the playoff.
That was a game that we could have run it three times and punted it every time and still won the game.
Yeah.
We were too stupid to do that.
So he's saying, this is a game, and so was the Kansas City game this year, where we could have lost the game. But in this season, you know, we're not. Now, and my question is, here's what's running through my mind. Can they take that newfound level? They found a new level in the second half that they have not played at this year. Okay.
Which is scary for other teams because we were not playing poorly up to this point.
Right. Well, they played inspired football. And that's why we're so excited about it. And so my question is, can they carry that now? And Mike always says, hit it. This is the time of year you want to hit it, going into the playoffs. Who cares that you're on top of the world in week 1, 2, and 3?
Right.
You need to be in week 15, 16, 17. Well, that's where we are,
right,
and the team hasn't played this way since 2008, probably. They now harness that and carry it through the rest of the season?
Right. Well, for me, it's like, you know, throughout the year, you could always see the light at the end of the tunnel here. For me, you know, you could always see how this thing could come together with all the talent that they have. But, you know, it's a little fuzzy. You know what I mean? There's certainly obstacles in that path. Baltimore, you know, can we get by Baltimore? Can we beat the Hall of Fame quarterbacks, right? Can we win when we stumble? Because we have a tendency to play down to teams all the time.
You know,
what's happening is this is, to me, the light is becoming so clear. I can now see how this team goes all the way. You know, they can overcome anything, man. I mean, you know, I'm not afraid of Baltimore. Bring on Baltimore. Bring them on in Baltimore.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Baltimore because I always said that the both games, Baltimore came and wanted it more than the Steelers did. And I think that's true. And I think when Baltimore played the Steelers these last two times, they hit that level. Because that's, you know, you watch Baltimore play the Seahawks and they lose. They almost lose to the Browns. They almost, well, not the Browns, but the Bengals. I mean, there's so many, the Cardinals, but when they play the Steelers, they are able to find that other level.
Right.
And now I'm going to tell you something, man. That's the second half effort that the Steelers made last night.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to beat the Ravens, that's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to take. Cause the Ravens are going to come with that again. They hate the Steelers. They want to do nothing more than eliminate the Steelers from the playoffs. And the Steelers are going to have to be ready for that. And hopefully we meet him and eliminate him. That'll make this season a sweet season. But I think that's what the Ravens come with when they come play the Steelers these last two times.
I think that, you know, going forward now, you know, I think that you're right about the next level thing, but I think the reason they were able to take it to this next level, the reason that this all came together at this point is in large part to me due to the fact that we've had so many young guys able to step up in these roles. You know, we had a ton of injuries last night. It didn't matter.
Right. And I just think that I agree that they're looking good at the right time of the season. Right. And they're actually, I'm going to get to that next part here in a second, but it's hard to stand up as a Steeler fan and say, look how great my team is because we just kicked the crap out of that. We just got past the Browns and we thought we did good. It's hard to stand up and say that to other fans or other teams.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Because it's like, they just look at you like you just beat the Browns. What are you so excited about? But I think that the thing that we're excited about is that this is a style that they're continuing to do. They're finding ways to win games. And sure, we did it against the Chiefs and the Browns, but we think that they're good enough to do this against, you know, playoff teams, the Patriots, the Ravens, you know, whoever's in the playoffs.
Right.
Well, I've been explaining it to people all day, and I make them understand. They can look at me and go, yeah, the Browns, and I can go, you know what? Whatever team you want to name, they lose that game. And I mean, come on. If you're an honest Steeler fan, you were like, how many times did I say, look, if we get out of here with 7-3, I'm happy.
Yeah,
and that's almost what it turned out to be. And 7 would have been enough in the end. But the point is just holding them to the 3. Just holding them to the 3. Come on. How many teams could do that?
So what are you guys thinking? What are you guys thinking when it's 7-3? They're driving down the field. and McCoy goes out because the personal foul, we didn't talk about it yet, but we will.
Yeah.
And then who is it? Seneca Wallace comes in. He completes a one pass inside the 10-yard line. Now they got first and goal from there. I mean, you got to be thinking that it could be 10-7. So, I mean, or actually, what were you thinking at that point?
I was thinking, I'm thinking, you know, maybe they score here and then we got to go back down. I mean, the worst case scenario, we're down three. So we can always get a field goal, put this thing in overtime. But the other thing I'm thinking is our goal line defense is maybe our best asset as a defense. You know, we have some really good goal line defense, and, you know, they hurt themselves with the penalty, which at that point, you know, when once they had to go 20 yards for a first down or whatever.
Yeah, so what happened on first down? I don't remember.
I have the play sheet in front of me so I can go and look.
Because it was second down that he went back to pass, and you got to give LeBeau so much credit because we were coming after him. I mean, we weren't sitting back. You know, I say sometimes, hey, just rush three. One of them might get there, make him squeeze it in. And I still like that, but the way LeBeau was coming after him with 5 and 6, so it seemed like, and they were getting pressure with Worlds and Harrison and all these guys, and that forced the intentional grounding, basically, is what they ended up getting, and made it 3rd and 20, which set up the interception.
The first down on that play is actually, they called us for, this is the one they called James Harrison for going over the line and causing the other guy to go over. You remember that? When it looked like it was going to be a false start?
Yeah, they never call that. That's always
that's a bunch of crap.
Start. If you don't make contact and you get back, it's not a penalty.
Right.
How many times? I mean, it's not like I broke a record, but I'm watching football 40 years, man, and I've heard that call probably 400 times. Okay? I got to tell you something. Ed Hockley last night, okay, I felt bad for the guy when he blew the damn whistle and gave the game that game – to Denver, okay?
Yeah.
The Ed Hockley rule. What was that? The Ed Hockley clear
the whistle, recovery quick whistle.
Rule? Yeah.
Yeah.
The clear recovery.
The Ed Hockley clear recovery. Let's always call it that because this man's name deserves to be tied to that. That's the worst game I think I may have ever seen called in the history of watching football.
This one?
Ed Hockley called a terrible.
Yesterday's?
Terrible game.
Yesterday's game?
Well, maybe the Raiders game a couple years ago was worse. I think the Raiders game was worse. But this was a terribly called game.
It was
god awful. That there were phantom penalties all night, and that was one. So
then anyway, they get to 3rd and 20, and a lot of people are really down on McCoy because it was a bad throw. But I mean, it's 3rd and 20. What do you want the guy to do? They got two chances to the end zone.
Right.
You got to throw the ball, and you had pressure on that play also.
And that's that's normally a high percentage throw against a Steeler corner. You put it up in the corner of the end zone like that, and the Steeler defender is usually out of position on that kind of play. And William Gay
was ready.
I mean, he was blanket coverage.
He played it well.
He was looking for it.
And no pass interference. I mean, that's the same thing. I mean, you're susceptible. You're winning 7-3. They're thrown to the end zone. You're susceptible to pass interference. First and goal at the one.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a disgusting part of the game. I got.
You know, the William Gay, not only did he do great in pass coverage, but, you know, he's also great at making tackles in the open field. You know, in that last possession, I know this is, you know.
Oh, yeah, he came from.
No, I was going to point this out also. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know that this is after the fact and whatever. We had already won by this point, but whatever. This was a couple of great plays by him to make tackles in the open field.
Inbounds.
Keep the clock running.
And he's playing smart because he hustled to make the tackle from behind, and then you see he gets up and he does the roll the clock move.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just running around without a purpose. He knew why he was hustling over there to get that guy down.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted that clock to keep rolling, man.
He dove to make the tackle to keep him in bounds as opposed to taking an extra step and like pushing him out of bounds. He knew what he was doing.
He did. He did. Oh. That's a smart play. I'm so impressed.
One more bad call for you, and this is a call on William Gay. This is on the Mundy interception on the last.
Oh my gosh, this.
I don't even understand this call. They called defensive holding on Gay because the offensive guy runs right to Gay, and then Gay just kind of taps him.
I think Gay wrinkled his shirt.
Yeah, Gay taps him. And then they call, offensive or defensive holding on that. Just just ridiculous calls left and right in this game.
I had, Tunch and, Bill, you know, the Steeler guys on Right. I was listening to them. They were delayed, but when I listened to that, and they were just cracking up about that play. You know, Tunch and Wolfley.
It's just, you know, I mean, it's par for the course for Hopkins' crew in this game. I mean, that overturned an interception. It's just ridiculous.
All right, so let's get to the James Harrison hit.
Yeah, I think it's about
– okay, let's go to email. Oh, okay, so one thing – okay. So,
well, let me just say that this morning, that was the thing. Not Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, they did talk about Ben.
They did.
Play, Ben played hurt, and he played well. It was gutsy, right? I mean, that's pretty much – what I got out of Mike and Mike this morning.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Steelers won. I think we got that much. And I don't think we heard about anything else other than Harrison. Okay. Repeat offender, deserved the call, deserves to get a fine, probably ought to be suspended because he's a repeat offender. That's what I got out of Mike and Mike and not just those two guys. Because they got a slew of freaking sport talking heads coming on, okay? All of them, to be sure, Tebow haters, okay? Come on, say,
what the hell is that?
Come on, because they're morons.
Oh. Yeah, Joe, correct, help me out here, because I only heard Greenberg say that, and Golic kind of agreed, but he didn't say anything about being suspended. Only Greenberg said Golic suspension.
Golic said.
He did?
Yeah. All these guys that came on said it.
That's what I'm asking because I didn't hear a lot of the show.
Only Kornheiser. And then I thought Wilbon, man, I wanted to have to smack him.
He didn't.
He almost compared it to Ndamukong Suh and what he did. Because he was using that to say it's different.
It's different.
Thank God. I'm like, don't go there.
This is what Tunch had to say about it when it happened. He said that, and I agree with this, obviously, because Steeler fan, but McCoy is running like a running back. I mean, he's running, and then right at the last second, he pulls up and throws the ball. So he's out of the pocket and running like a running back. Now, In the rules, you're allowed to hit a running back helmet to helmet. There's no foul for that. That's okay to do. There's never been a penalty against hitting a runner helmet to helmet. And so he's running like a running back, and Harrison's going after him to tackle him like a running back. And then all of a sudden he stops and throws the ball, so now he becomes a quarterback, and Harrison has to change his, you know, within one step he's got to change how he's going to tackle him.
Yes,
I don't know.
If you play the linebacker, you have to demonstrate that you can levitate. Okay, because that's what they want these guys to do. And Golic, to tell you what Golic was saying, Golic was with you on that early in the morning. First thing he was going, first he came on and said, yeah, you ought to be fined and blah, blah, blah. Then he said, no, now I got new information about this. And he talked about the running back thing. Then later he changed his mind again and he said, well, you know, he did throw the ball. And so then that made him a quarterback again. And it's like, come on, man. This is a physical game. We're not playing. You know, we're not playing in a courtroom here, okay? It's a physical freaking game, and these guys are going, they're talented athletes, and they're going 1,000 miles an hour, and they're playing the game with passion, because that's what we want to see as fans, okay? If you want a bunch of deadbeats to play the game, put them out there and see how many tickets you sell. See how many TV contracts you get. See how much ratings you get, okay? Put a bunch of lethargic guys, shoot them up on something, okay? Put them on Ritalin. So they're not so damn excited while they're out there. Okay? Because this is a bunch of crap. All right? So now he hits the guy. Even if he was a quarterback, okay? He tackled the man. His helmet goes into the other guy's helmet. He's got a head. Okay? And I got to tell you, I like Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders goes, what's he supposed to do? Who tackles with their face up? Nobody does that.
That was funny when he was doing it. Yeah.
It was hilarious. Yes. And then tonight I got to watch Rodney Harrison going, Harrison's going to have to be, James Harrison is going to have to be suspended. I got to listen to Rodney Harrison.
Rodney Dirty Harrison, as I like to call him.
Right. And he's going, you know, look, I did this stuff too, and I'm going to have the concussions to pay for it when I'm in my 50s. And, you know, shut the hell up already, you freaking hypocrite.
No, how the hell can you call him a hypocrite? What he's saying is,
Tell me. I want to hear what he's saying. I didn't hear it.
Well, it's pretty clear what he's saying. What he's saying is, when he says, I'm going to live with these concussions in my 50s, what he's saying is, I negatively impacted my life by playing recklessly. The NFL is trying to help you later in life. Don't play recklessly is what they're trying to say. So, yeah, you know, he needs to be suspended so he can learn. I'm not saying, look, why am I getting into this? Because I don't want to say Harrison should be suspended. But Rodney Harrison's saying the right thing. You know, what he's saying is, I lived through this. I did this. I know this is going to happen to me now.
So what's your take on Harrison's hit, Tony?
Well, Harrison should be, fine, but not suspended. I mean, yeah, his play, it was, you know, by the letter of the law or whatever, yeah, it was not a legal hit. It falls into a weird gray area of, you know, well, he was gonna run, but then he didn't run, and then he threw, and you know, was there enough time for him to realize that he was throwing the ball and not hit him, and, you know, it was a bang-bang play, whatever. You know, the guy gets fined, fine the guy. You know, it's not, at the end of the day, the $100, $100,000 or whatever he gets fined doesn't matter.
I think the league needs to make a statement and not fine him, just to show that, you know what, it was a penalty, but because it was out of the pocket, and, you know, I mean, he was a runner, so, and then all of a sudden he was a passer. It just,
right, but
I don't know.
Going outside the pocket doesn't make you a runner.
No, he tucked the ball.
When you're outside the pocket, all your protection low goes away.
Yeah, but he's basically at the line of scrimmage also.
Right, he was running towards the line of scrimmage. Right, that's what I'm saying. That's where it falls into, you know, could you make the argument that he was running? Yes. Could you make the argument that he wasn't going to run? Well, yeah, because he threw the ball. So that's why I don't really have a real opinion about them.
You know what would have been interesting? What if he was a half yard over the line of scrimmage, meaning it was an illegal pass and that was a penalty, and Harrison still hit him the same way? Then would that have been illegal?
Right.
Because then Harrison's all on the rights. You know, he went that extra half a yard over the line of scrimmage. He shouldn't be throwing it now, so I should be allowed to hit him helmet to helmet, basically.
Right. And that, yeah.
So based on that.
Let me ask you something. Because really, the NFL is trying to stop all these concussions and all of that. Why the hell is it then it's okay to give a running back a concussion? Because you can go helmet to helmet on a running back. There's nothing wrong with that.
You know why it's okay? Because they would be calling it every other play or every, you know, at least once a series, or they couldn't stop it. It happens so often, and they don't want to change the game. They'd have to really change the game for that. I mean, just watch any play. The running back puts his head down. Who knows?
I'm not buying this. We want to stop the concussions. I'm gonna say they're doing it because they don't want Tom Brady's and the Aaron Rodgers and the big stars going out. Because they don't really call it on the other guys. You can hit a no-name quarterback.
What was the last
good.
Running back to have a concussion?
Running back to have a concussion?
What was the last running back you remember going out of a game missing on a concussion?
I mean, I can't name
you can't.
Everybody.
There, because there isn't one.
Come on, how many guys can you name that had concussions? I didn't know Rodney Harrison had concussions.
Right, well, that's because he played during an era when they didn't diagnose concussions.
How about protecting the defensive player then? You know?
Well, the defensive player is the one that initiates it.
Right.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to protect at the end of the day.
Well, Paul Amala basically gave himself two concussions this season, right?
Right. I think the reason that they want to protect the quarterback is because you're more likely to get a concussion if you are a stationary target. It's the whiplash effect. Right?
And receivers.
And receivers too, same way. All right,
email.
Email. We have a good email this week. This is going to catch you guys off guard. We may have to take a break here for you guys to think this one through because this is a tough one.
Nah, let's just do it.
All right.
Who's this from?
This is from Mike.
Mike.
Mike from Pittsburgh.
All right, Mike from Pittsburgh. Thank you for writing in, Mike. I don't even know what you're going to say again. Hopefully I'll be thankful after I'm done hearing.
This is a really half-formed thought since the enjoyable win over the Bengals, particularly that spectacular second quarter. If you could pick your favorite individual quarters from the Steelers' recent history, let's say the Roethlisberger era to keep it manageable, which quarter from which games would you select? Think of it as if you were making a compilation DVD with four Funfest quarters from each of the different games.
I think it was the third quarter when we started coming back against Baltimore in the playoffs last year.
Yes.
Right, we were down 21-7.
Hell of a quarter.
I mean, that was just pandemonium the way that we were just coming back and got a fumble and then got an interception and took the lead. I think they took the lead. I can't remember. So immediately, that's my third quarter if we're going to have to pick four quarters.
I'll name the two that he named, or the three that he names. He's obviously the second quarter of Steelers-Bengals.
Wait, you want to see if we can guess them?
I want to take these off the table, so we have to go even
deeper. Oh, okay.
I'm deep.
All right.
I'll be shocked.
Second quarter.
He's got the one that I'm
second quarter of Steelers-Bengals. The third quarter of Steelers-Chargers in the playoffs when they held the ball for 17 seconds. The Chargers.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
But the Steelers only put up 7 points in that game.
This is good, Mike.
I got to stick with my Baltimore one for the
and
third
then the
quarter,
fourth
though.
Quarter of Super Bowl 43, which is then a weird one to put in there because that also includes Larry Fitzgerald's 60-yard touchdown run, which no one wants to relive.
But to win a Super Bowl that way, I mean, that tops anything and everything, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
And then Harrison's interception in that Super Bowl, could almost make any quarter. You know what I mean? That one play is just as good for any quarter.
You think he's talking? No, he's just talking about the most spectacular quarter. Just a quarter of football.
We're only picking one.
One quarter.
One quarter.
But you have to pick four 1/4s to put them on a compilation.
Oh, I can't pick four all at once.
Four is hard. I think you could take probably the first quarter of the 2005 Steelers-Colts game was amazing, right?
Yes, that's awesome. A good one. That's a good one.
The fourth quarter of Steelers-Bengals in 2005 when we came back and won that game. Or this is out of the Roethlisberger era now, but the fourth quarter of Steelers-Browns, the 2002 playoff game.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was awesome, right?
That was wild.
The first half, I don't know which quarter it was, but the game when we scored 5 touchdowns in the first half against the Ravens on a Sunday night or Monday night game, when Roethlisberger threw 5 touchdowns that night, that was another one.
I remember hearing, I mean, I don't remember that game though, but I know it was talked about recently.
Yeah, that's a great one. Oh my goodness. The fourth quarter of Steelers Cowboys in 2008 was unfreaking real. When we came back to tie the game, it was like 17-10. We're losing the entire game, right? And finally in the fourth quarter, as the Steelers do, they finally come back and Heath Miller scores a touchdown and it's tie game, 17-17. Woo, I go to overtime, right?
Because there's like a minute left, 2 minute and a half left.
Yeah,
minute
and a half left. The Cowboys get the ball back. All right, D, we just got to stop them and get to overtime.
But the Cowboys the Cowboys think, okay, we got a minute and a half. We're going to get in field goal range and the game.
We're going to drive right down. Boom, very next play. Deshae Townsend takes it to the house on a Romo pick.
Sweet.
The Steelers win 24-17. That was amazing. That's the play. That's the combination of plays I remember when I think of the 2008 Steeler defense. It's really that game and those plays that I think about. That game against the Cowboys was amazing.
You know, I mean, Paul Amala's interception in 2008 in the championship game to close out that game.
Oh yeah.
That made that fourth quarter exciting also. Yeah.
That fourth quarter was great as well. Yeah.
I can't be limited to the Roethlisberger era. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm going to name a few. I'm only gonna name one.
Oh, can I guess one that you're gonna name?
Let's name one from the Roethlisberger era. No, you haven't. I mean, you named a lot of them.
I have gone over.
But here's one that I think a lot of people forget about. One of the funnest times I had. This is really more offense than defense. Is in the 2005 playoff run, the AFC Championship game, the first quarter against the Broncos. The Steelers opened it up, and Roethlisberger was on fire.
That's when
he did his bang bang. You know, I'm a cowboy, I'm a shooting cowboy, or whatever. So that's one of my favorites from the Roethlisberger time. And there's lots of other. Obviously, the first half of the Jets game last year in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The two playoff games where he eliminated the Ravens in recent playoffs.
Yeah.
But if I go back, some of my favorite.
Are we going back to 1995?
95?
I got one in 95.
Which one?
I got, I think it's second quarter or third quarter of the Super Bowl. I know we lost that game.
Oh.
But we are coming back.
Yeah, that was fun, but no, that wasn't going to be
with
one.
The onside.
I think it was maybe in fourth quarter.
Oh, really?
I think it was like 12 minutes left. We scored and then we got the onside kick and
Yeah. It was third.
Got a field goal.
From the Cower era, there are a lot of fun games.
Oh,
There's a couple of Monday night games.
Oh, that's right. Now I'm thinking, go ahead.
Those are two games. One of them I watched with I watched with a Bills fan, and it was really ugly. I only stayed for the first half.
Ooh.
It was just nasty.
We just kicked the crap out of them, and I remember right before the half, Jim Kelly tries to throw like a little screen pass, which really meant nothing. They weren't going to do anything with it,
yeah.
And it goes right to Carnell Lake, and he interception for a touchdown.
Interception, touchdown right before half.
Which made it like another, you know, just take the lead from 17 to 24 or something like that.
One of the only plays that I can remember clear as day from, you know, when I was a kid back in 1994, whenever this was, maybe it was even earlier than that, but it was Steelers Bills Monday Night Football. And I gotta tell you, you know, I was watching football, I was probably 9 or 10 at the time. And, you know, there are big hits in football, but I had to this point never seen a hit this bad. And as like a 9-year-old kid, you're watching football and you're going, oh my God, is he dead? I don't understand.
Which hit is it?
That hard.
Is it Don Beebe hit?
This is Rod Woodson against Don Beebe on the sideline. Obviously it's nostalgia or whatever for the hit, but I've never seen anyone get hit that hard.
Up to that.
And was it Woodson? I thought it may have been someone else.
It could have been Carnell Lake.
It was either Woodson or it was one of those guys.
But Don Beebe got crushed.
Yeah. All right. So,
what else you got?
Also from the Cower era, there were 2 weeks in a row where the Steelers took on undefeated New England Patriots and Philadelphia
Eagles. First quarter, that
was
awesome.
Yeah.
Just dismantled. I mean, from the first series, the Steelers were out there, and you knew they were just going. That this team had the opponent had run in to their Waterloo, man. They just met it. They were dead.
Well, I think one of the first passes of the Steelers Patriots that year, one of Brady's first passes was a pick six to Deshae Townsend.
So those two, there's also a game against the undefeated New Orleans Saints in 1992 or three. The Saints came in 6-0. Jim Mora Sr. was their coach and they were a Super Bowl bound team. So everybody thought, and they were the last undefeated team, and the Steelers took them out in very convincing fashion.
I think Woodson had two interceptions in that game, one for a touchdown, if I remember right. He was on his way to defensive MVP that year. So I think that was 93.
And then I don't know if these are quarters or not, but the 1989 playoff game in the Houston Astrodome where the Steelers took out the Oilers in the playoffs, I don't know if there was one convincing quarter in that.
How about the fifth quarter?
The fifth quarter.
Overtime.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was a very fun game all in all. I don't know if it was a fun fest in any one quarter where it just got out of hand. And then I'll go last one. I'll go all the way back to the late 70s. One of my first favorite memories of the Steelers as far as just a ass whipping on an opponent. The Houston Oilers were in 1978 were one of only two teams to beat the Steelers in a regular season. And they came into Pittsburgh on a rainy day in 1978, and the Steelers beat the living crap out of them. It was the entire first half. I don't know what the score was, but the Oilers just drowned in the rain.
I think it was 34-5, something like that.
It was just a classical ass whipping of the Houston Oilers. And they really did that, if I could remember the other playoff games. That was the real memorable one. But there were some other playoff games that year. The Steelers just dismantled their playoff opponents in those seasons. So anyway, that's how far back as I'm going to go.
Mike, you got any more? I got two more, Mike. You got any more?
Go ahead.
Okay. I got two Jerome Bettis moments. I got, how about Jerome Bettis' return or revenge against the Rams?
Oh, yeah.
First or second quarter of that game was, you know, that was one of the funnest games I've seen. And then my other favorite one is, I think it's the third quarter or maybe the fourth quarter. I remember we were facing the Bears, in 2005. The Steelers are 7-5. They're playing a Bears team that, you know, they were good at the time, but they were the kind of the lucky Bears. They would get weird turnovers and win games in weird ways. They weren't necessarily a dominating team, but the Steelers needed to win out at this point. They're 7-5. They just lost to the division rival Bengals. You know, we're all down and out about the Steelers, and they need to come out and win. They go to halftime. It's a very close game at halftime, and they come out in the second half, and it's now a blizzard. It's an absolute blizzard out there. The field is white. You can't hardly see where you are on the field. And I believe that is the game that Jerome Bettis had something like, you know, 4 carries for negative 2 yards and 3 touchdowns. You know, I think it was his stat line in that game. That was an amazing, at least second half of that game.
And that's where Jerome Bettis ran over Brian Urlacher going into the end zone.
Oh, yeah. That's the 2005.
2005, yeah.
That was the start. They never lost again. They went all the way to Super Bowl.
Right. I think, Joe, you mentioned last week that happened like mid-season, but I think Tony's right. We were 7-5.
We were 7-5, yeah.
That's when you want to get hot, right? Last 4 games. There, you know, I just thought of when you were bringing those up, there was a mid-90s game against the Bengals, and I think the Steelers may have been just mediocre. It must have been like 94, 95, because Cordell was on the team and he was playing wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a back-and-forth game, and this is when Cordell first started playing receiver, and he was in the slot, and they didn't cover him. He was just like wide open, and they hit him for a long pass. And then we did like a 2-point conversion option play with Pegram, I think. It was just a wild game. So I'm guessing that there was a fun quarter in there, whether it'd been the third or the fourth.
Didn't Cordell have like a 90-yard quarterback rollout against the Panthers or something?
Yeah, well, in his rookie year, he played like in week 15 or 16, one of the don't care games because the Steelers didn't have to win.
Right.
They were already in. And Cowher let him start at quarterback. And, yeah, he scrambled and had like an 80-yard run, which is like a longest run of a quarterback at the time.
Yeah. That was pretty crazy. Oh, I just thought of another good one. I'm going to blank on it now. It was I don't got it.
Well, Mike, thank you for the email. I love these trips down you know, Steelers memory lane. A lot of fun stuff. Excellent question. Excellent email. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that was fun. That was
good. Yeah. All right. So it's a little bit of a shorter podcast this week, but wanted to get it to you guys early so you guys can, you know, relive this with us.
The media is ignoring our – when our Steelers step up, man, I mean, look, we're as critical as anybody. I own up to that. I'm a big baby fan. I want my Steelers to be greater – than I even think they are, and I think
Let me tell you about this. No Steeler fan wants to watch the Steelers with Joe because he is, and I don't mean to be, you know, I don't mean to be negative about you, Joe, but you are quite negative about the Steelers.
I am not negative. I just have high expectations.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they disappoint me when they don't live up to their potential, and so this time they lived above their potential in the second half. But you can't sit there and tell me that this team wasn't living up to its potential before Ben went down.
They were. They were just fumbling inside the 10.
They were fumbling. They were finding every which way to blow another Thursday night game against a opponent.
But that's right? I mean, Tony
so
put it to
tell
us
me
a
that,
few
oh,
weeks
I'm
ago.
Be happy with that.
That's this team. I mean, I'm accepting it.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, guys. Get on board with this.
Yeah.
Get on board with it. Don't, you know, when the Steelers give up a long drive to open up a game and it's 3-0. Don't get so down on it. Just ride this out with this team. You know, this is the Mike Tomlin style. And if you don't like the Mike Tomlin style, you're going to be in for some, you're going to be in for some nail biters. But, you know, I've come to realize.
You like it, don't like it, you're going to be nail bite.
Don't worry about how ugly it is.
Yeah, just don't worry
about
how ugly
the final
it is.
Score.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right. Yeah. Do you want to guys want to look ahead? Or do you want to do another podcast next week? Just dedicated to San Francisco. I feel like we should. Just in case,
well,
you know, some,
such a long
let's say, and I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say what I think could happen this Sunday, and I don't think any of us should.
No, we shouldn't. But yeah, I'll give
let's
a
just say something were to happen Sunday.
There might be something to talk about.
Could be something to talk about all next right. week. So we'll save that. All right. So that being said, that's going to do it for Steeler Country, not necessarily this week, but for today.
For this, what were you calling it?
Well, I want to make another I'd like to make another comment on what Joe was saying, that no one's talking about the team. I mean, I kind of said it before. It's because a lot of people didn't see the game because it's on NFL Network.
Right.
And then and some people didn't see the game because it's late or, you know, it's boring, whatever. But you wake up and – or you weren't interested in it because it was Steelers-Browns and you think, oh, the Steelers are just going to blow them out. So you wake up and you see the score 14-3 and you just kind of think like, okay, maybe it was close for a while, but the Steelers probably, you know, got ahead and then just, you know, put the game away and ran the ball at the end and it was boring.
Right.
And then when you hear a Steeler fan say, oh, but, you know, Ben went down and they had to overcome and blah, 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 and they played tough and all this, and it's just like, ah, you know, big deal. It was the Browns. So I think that's why you're not hearing much about it. And, you know, the other thing was the basketball and baseball stories that were going on.
Right.
But, you know, if you listen to NFL Network, the NFL channels, whether it be on the radio or on the TV, I mean, they're talking about it because it's football.
They're not talking about Harrison's hit.
Yeah,
more
they're
than
not.
Anything else.
And I don't blame them for talking about it, you know, in this way. I don't expect them to talk about this as some great Steeler performance. Steeler fans know what we just watched. The media doesn't have to recognize it yet, because at the end of the day, I don't want the Steelers to become the, you know, the media darlings and the, you know, the class of the AFC and that stuff. Let us stay under the radar. Let people think that Baltimore is still a better team than us. You know, let them think that, you know, the Steelers are just a one of four of the best teams in the AFC. And this team will continue to week in and week out, go out and win games, find ways to win. And when we get into the playoffs, everyone's going to turn their head and go, hey, wait a sec. Why haven't we been talking about Pittsburgh all year? Same way that they did this. They did the same thing to Green Bay last year. I love the position we're in. And I think that 13-3 right now is not just a real possibility. It is almost inevitable. Whether or not Ben Roethlisberger plays next week or not.
The team is gaining a lot of confidence because they're putting in these young players and they're getting a lot of experience and they're producing. So then when you get your starting players back and you can mix them in with these young players, I mean, and they're gaining confidence against these, you know, not so good teams. And a lot of people wouldn't think that makes a difference, but we can tell it is making a difference. It's going to pay off when you're playing a tough team and you have the confidence to win ugly, just find a way to win at the end.
Yeah,
I mean, even against these bad teams, it's still part of the building process. So I think I think you're right. I think we're in for a ride.
We are, man, and I can't wait. I cannot wait for January. I can't wait for this playoff run. It's going to be really exciting, and hopefully we get some good matchups. You know, hopefully we get to go against Baltimore again. Obviously, we want to prove that was just, you know, that was a fluky two games there, and we are still, you know, the class of the division, the class of the AFC, and better than the Baltimore Ravens. And then I hope that we get that Super Bowl rematch, because I think we all know that, you know, that's what the Steelers have to prove now. That is the last piece to the puzzle, the unfinished business that we have against Aaron Rodgers and that Green Bay Packer team. So anyway, that's going to do it for Steeler Country. Thank you all for listening. If you want to send feedback, steelercountry@gmail.com is the email address. The website, steelercountry.net. And the Twitter is twitter.com/SteelerCountry. Thank you all. We'll see you in a couple days when we talk about the Sunday that just happened.